Hey folks, this is Kevin. In case you haven't heard, I am in the middle of moving to Thailand. When I'm recording this little bit right here, I'm still in my New York apartment, but about to break my recording equipment down for a couple weeks. So today I give you over to Risk Story Coach and Master Storyteller Brad Lawrence from our staff to guest host for me today. So I will see you on the other side, and here is Brad.
Hey, folks.
Oh, sorry.
You know, I will say, I cried.
How's that sound?
Should I head back to the script now? Okay.
All right, here we go.
Hey, folks. This is Risk. How is that? Folks, this is Risk, the show where people tell true stories they never thought they'd dare to share. I'm Brad Lawrence, and this is one of our conversation story episodes, where someone tells us a story, and then we chat about it. Simple as that. Today we're sharing a story that Scott McMahon told Dawn Fraser, who's one of our fellow story coaches here at Risk, and who's told stories on Risk many times, about her history as a college athlete, as well as her relationship with her developmentally challenged twin brother, and on her work in the social justice arenas. And as you'll soon see, Dawn brings some of that additional specialized expertise to this conversation. This story that Scott McMahon told us, we're calling it Midnight in Manila. I was actually the coach on this story. It was a shocking story to hear, describing things that I personally found almost unsurvivable. I had never heard anything like it. I'd never heard anyone, you know, sort of going into an experience like this. I'm trying to sort of capture how shocking it was for me to hear without giving anything away. So, first thing, we're going to hit a quick break, and then we'll be hearing Scott's story.
Ready to launch your business? Get started with the commerce platform made for entrepreneurs. Shopify is specially designed to help you start, run, and grow your business with easy, customizable themes that let you build your brand, marketing tools that get your products out there, integrated shipping solutions that actually save you time. From startups to scale-ups, online, in person, and on the go, Shopify is made for entrepreneurs like you.
Sign up for your $1 a month trial at shopify.com/setup.
We're back.
So, here's Dawn now with Scott McMahon with a story we call Midnight in Manila.
I was living in Manila, Philippines, 2009 when this all started happening. I was living in a subdivision with my wife, my daughter, my son, working for a construction company. Long hours, leave early morning, come home late at night. I met another white guy in our subdivisions. We were the only two. I met him when I was going to the store to buy some beer, and he was this Belgian guy. And Mian, when he sees me, he goes, "Oh, you drink beer?" "Yeah, I drink beer." "Well, for this, we will drink." His English was horrible, and he thought it was so good. And so, like, okay. So we start having some beers, and he was a cool dude. He says, "Yeah, I just live over here in the other street, and I'm married, and yada, yada." So, "Oh, that's cool." So we had a few beers and, you know, I went home and we would see each other probably every other day, you know, because they live two streets over. So we don't, you know, and he didn't work. So whenever I'd come in, he's always there at the store drinking beer because I'd pass that way to go to my house. So he'd see me and he'd flag me down. You know, "Scott, Scott, Scott." So I'd be like, "Wait, yeah, and I got to go home first." So I'd go home and then walk back. And so
were you living by yourself or you had family?
With my wife and my daughter and my son.
Your wife's Filipina?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I would go back and we would hang out and he's married and He met her in a bar in South Korea when he was working over there. He's a mechanical engineer, and she was a waitress. And they ended up, you know, falling in love or whatever, and they got married and came back here, and so here he was. After about a month, he starts confiding to me that he's just, you know, there's something not right with Dolores. I said, what's not right? He says, well, come here. We go to his house, and he opens up his closet, and there's all these passports, like 40, 50 passports.
What?
Of girls, women. Not young girls, but it's 18 to 25, some, you know.
40 to 50 passports.
Yeah. And I'm like, what is this? He goes, I don't know. I'm like, dude, this ain't right. And he goes, yeah. And I found this. And he shows me a marriage certificate with her name on it and another guy's name on it.
Oh, no.
And this is 20 years old. And there's no divorce in the Philippines.
There's no divorce as in?
There's no divorce. Once you're married, you're married. Okay. There's no divorce. You can get an annulment, but it takes years.
So he was maybe married, maybe not married to this woman.
Yeah. Well, that's the question. I says, well, if this marriage certificate's real, your marriage isn't real. He goes, no, we got married with a priest and I have my marriage certificate. He shows me his marriage certificate. So I said, what do you want to do? He goes, I don't know. He goes, can we find out if it's real? I said, yeah, we can go down to the NSO, National Statistics. We went down there, and sure enough, it was real.
Hmm.
Well, then we checked his marriage certificate with her. That was submitted also.
And was it real?
Well, it was submitted and stamped, but it wasn't real.
It wasn't valid.
It wasn't valid, yeah. And I said, dude, she's scamming you. Hmm. I said, where did you get married? He goes, oh, in Recto. This place called Recto. Recto is like the forgery capital of the world. You can go to Recto and get anything, Harvard degree if you want. Seriously. And
I wasted my time.
Yeah. And so they went down there, and what happened was she rented an office space for 30 minutes, hired a fake priest for 30 minutes, got all fake documents, had a little ceremony, and went and submitted it to the statistics office.
Oh, my God.
Because they're not going to check if she's married to someone else or not.
Right.
They just want the money.
Right.
So I said, dude, you're being scammed. And when she found out, because he confronted her, and she went ballistic. And they had a big fight, and he came to my house and said, can I stay here? I said, yeah, you can stay here, sure, of course.
So he had no other friends, or he had no other...
No, he didn't know anybody but me.
Okay.
Nobody could understand him. I had a hard time understanding him.
Right. Oh, no.
So I said, yeah, sure, no problem. And he stayed for a week. And she came over a couple times, and they talked, worked things out, and he went back. 2 weeks later, he came back.
Scott, for this I cannot stand... His English was horrible.
Oh, so no.
I said, what happened? He goes, she's just crazy. She's crazy. I'm finished. I'm done. I'm
like, okay. So he comes back and stays for another week. And I was, you know, I would leave early morning. I would leave at 5. I get home 10 at night. We'd work our 8 hours, but you had to plan in 3-4 hours just for travel time, just because of the traffic. The traffic is so horrible. I mean, the job site's 10 miles away, but it takes 2 hours to get there and 3 hours to get home.
What?
Yeah, some of the worst traffic in the world, actually.
Wow.
So I get home, it'd be 10 o'clock at night. Mm. I'm tired. Everybody's sleeping, so I just go to bed.
Mm-hmm.
I had no idea what had been going on until one night I came home and everybody's up. My wife's look on her face was, she's frazzled looking. And I said, where's Yan? And she says, he was arrested. I said, what happened? She says, they came to the house. They raided the house and arrested him with national TV. I said, no shit. Yeah, and the kids were in the room. They weren't out in the living room. I said, where's the kids? She's in the room. I went in the room, and my son was 5. My daughter was 2. My daughter was sleeping. My son was just trembling.
Oh, my God. Who raided you?
Philippine National Police, Bureau of Immigration, and National Television. She had it all coordinated.
Oh, my God.
She filed a complaint saying that he would make her mix cement out on the sidewalk and burn her face with cigarettes.
What?
But yet she had no marks on her face.
And so this is how she got him arrested.
This is how she got him arrested. Domestic violence.
Domestic violence.
But why was the Bureau of Immigration there? They shouldn't have been there. So she had it all set up. And they took him to the immigration jail. Not regular jail. So he's off in immigration jail. My son's just sitting in the corner trembling. He didn't even sleep that night. So the next morning, I said, okay, I'm not going to go to work. And I told him, I said, let's get you ready for school and take you to school. He says, uh-oh, I don't want to go, Papa. I said, why? He says, the monster's there. The monster, which I found out later, was her. So her sister lived right across the street from us. And during the week, she would stay at her sister's house and wait for them to come outside. And she would threaten them. Especially my wife. She said, you should have never got involved in our problems. You're going to pay.
My gosh.
You're going to wish you never got involved in my problems.
She was torturing these children.
Yep.
Just your son?
And my daughter. And my wife.
And your wife?
Yeah.
And your wife didn't say anything?
Didn't say nothing.
Why?
She's scared.
Oh, my God.
She was afraid she'd get beat up. So this all hits me at once, you know? It's like a bam. So I'm pissed, of course. I called a friend of mine, and he recommended a psychologist. And he was one of the best in the country, really well known, and got me an appointment for that day. So I took my son. We got there, and I said, I had a problem. This something happened last night. And he says, whoa, whoa, whoa. He goes, I don't want to hear it. He goes, let me talk to your son first. So we took him in the room, probably a half hour, hour. Came back out and said, okay. The secretary says, he'll see you now. It's okay. So my son went out. I went in. I closed the door, and he goes, what the fuck happened? And I was like, well, I was trying to tell you. He goes, well, I didn't want to hear it from you. He goes, who's the monster? And I said, I don't know. Who is the monster? He says, Dolores is the monster. Dolores is Jan's wife. I said, okay. And so he starts showing me these tests that he gave him. The one I really remember was the tree person test. My son drew a big tree, which we had in our front yard. And then he drew himself very, very small and curled up hiding. And then he drew a picture of the monster, which was Dolores, hovering above him. And then in the back behind the tree was a really big person who he said was me. And I was the only one that could save the little boy from the monster. But I was never there.
Oh, my God.
And I was like, broke my heart, man. So he said, you know, he has chronic post-traumatic stress disorder because of what happened, because of her. So, he, you know, he made his report. I got his report, got an attorney. We filed a complaint against her for child abuse.
What was your intent with the filing?
Get her arrested, put her in jail for what she did. You know, to get back at her. That's you know, here in the States, that's what we do. There, apparently, you know, you don't do that.
Okay.
So, yeah, I know. It's the Filipino way. So he files the complaint, and the legal system over there takes forever. We give a little extra money to get it read faster, to get it processed faster, not necessarily to make it in our favor, just to get it going. That works, and they found probable cause. They issued a warrant of arrest. They arrested her.
They arrested her?
Yeah, but it's a bailable offense.
Oh, okay.
So she posted bail, got out, and then I noticed she wouldn't be at her sister's house anymore. So I'm thinking, oh, okay. She knows what's up. You know, her time's coming.
She's staying away.
Well, she was staying away because she was filing her case against me. So when we got to court, which was like a year and a half later.
My God.
Yeah. We're down in the, there's a McDonald's at the bottom of the court. Court's on the second floor. And we're just sitting there waiting. It's like 8 a.m. We left that morning. I told the kids, oh, me and mommy have a meeting. The babysitter came. We'll be back at noon. Then we'll all go to the mall, have fun, ride the roller coasters. They love the roller coasters, man. So they're like, yay, yay. I never came home for 5.5 years.
What?
Didn't come home.
Wait. Yeah. Well, back me up. What do you mean? What happened?
We got to the court, and we're waiting for the court to open upstairs. We're in the McDonald's. She walks in, looks at us, and walks out. So I'm thinking, oh, boy, she's scared. Right after that, the door opens, and we see this bright light. It's a television camera. And five cops, and then a cameraman. Mm. And they walk in. I'm thinking, I look at my wife and go, I wonder who they're going to get.
Did you think that they might be there for your case?
No, I thought they were there for someone else. Mm-hmm. Until they started walking towards us. And I'm like, okay. And they walk right up to our table and, are you Scott McMahon? We got a warrant for your arrest. I said, for what? They said, rape. Stand up. You're under arrest. You're going with us.
Oh, my God.
And I look at my wife, and my wife's kind of hiding, you know, her face because she didn't want to be on the camera, right?
Yeah, of course.
So I stood up. We walked outside. Right as we walked outside, she was standing out there. Mm. When she saw me, she says, you think you're going to rape me? That you can get away with it? You'll never get away with it.
Nobody said anything about the fact that this woman and I are going to court right now.
I told the police, I go, listen, we have a court date right now.
Yeah.
You know, I have a case against her. And they said, so we have a warrant. You're coming with us.
Oh, my God.
I just got in the car. And the jail's 10-minute drive from there. It's 300-400 yards.
So they're taking you directly to jail.
Well, they took me. They went the opposite way. I said, I'm like, where are we going? They're like, don't worry about it. About an hour later, we pull into a place called Camp Crame, which is the headquarters for the National Police, the main headquarters. And I'm like, okay, this ain't good. Stop, we get out, and they said, let's go inside. And their main chief meets me and says, bring him in here. We go in his office, and he says, these are some serious charges against you. Like, I didn't do anything wrong. I didn't rape anybody. And he goes, well, doesn't look like it. I said, I didn't rape anybody. And he goes, I'll tell you what, I can help you. And then I'm thinking, here it comes. Here comes the money. They want money. Mm. He says, you know, we can work this out and you can go home today. And I said, no way. I said, I ain't paying. He says, you know, you might want to take some time and think about it. And he left for like an hour. So I'm just sitting in there. And then one of the officers comes in and goes, do you want something to eat or something to drink? I'm like, no, I'm good. No way, man. And then they'd bring in the good cop and he'd be like, she's crazy, huh, man? That just doesn't seem right. I'm like, yeah, she's crazy, all right. And then the bad cop would come in. Man, you're going down, dude.
Oh, my gosh.
So the chief comes in after an hour and says, change your mind? I said, no. I said, I didn't do anything wrong, man. I'm not paying. It's okay. You're going to jail. So they took me to jail. We get there, and they're not ready for me. Paperwork wasn't finished, so we have to wait outside.
And you haven't been in contact with your wife or?
She was down there waiting for me.
Oh, she was. Okay.
So she knew at some point that we were going to go there, hopefully. We pulled in. I saw her there. I was like, all right, thank God. Mm. And I'm thinking maybe she's got good news. Mm. You know, maybe I'm going home. But when I saw her and the look on her face, I'm like, there's no good news.
So this is an offense where you cannot post bail.
Non-bailable offense. Yes, rape. And all they have to do is point you and say, he raped me. And that's considered strong evidence by the court. Because of a law they have called the Maria Clara Doctrine. Hmm. And that basically says a Filipino woman would not lie.
Ooh.
So we're sitting out there and this jail, it's pink. And it's chain link fencing on the outside. So it kind of looks like a unkept dog kennel. So we're sitting out there waiting and the warden comes out. And he introduces himself, shakes my hand, and says, who's that over there? Is that your wife? I go, it's my wife. So he says, ma'am, come here. And of course, they're doing all this in Tagalog. But what they didn't know is I could understand fluently and speak fluently. So he's telling her, you know, you can bring him food 3 times a day. You can bring him water because he won't be able to drink the water. And then he looks at me in English. He says, you see that guy sitting inside there? There's a little Filipino dude in a Led Zeppelin t-shirt. I said, yeah. He goes, well, he's the mayor and he runs the inside. So, you know, I suggest you become friends with him because you're going to be here a while and I'll even introduce you.
Oh, my God.
And he says, any questions? I said, yeah, one. He says, what's that? What's the mayor of the city doing in jail? I mean, how does that work? And he just laughed at me. He's like I was dumb. He goes, what do you Americans call it? Gang leader. He's the gang leader. I was like, oh, okay, now I get it. And he looks over at my wife and says, ma'am, don't forget to bring him food and water because if not, he'll die.
Oh my God.
They said, let's go. And we go inside. And once we get inside, I have to sign a couple papers. And then we go to this hallway, which is about 10 feet long. And right as we got to the hallway, there was a stench. Nasty stench, like shit and piss and vomit. I mean, it was nasty. It's the best way I can explain it.
So you're walking into the hallway and the cells are to your sides?
There's no cells yet. The hallway is like 10 feet long. And then there's stairs that go up and they're like ship stairs. They're like that steep.
Mm.
And there's one cell to the left and that's maximum security. And we look and it's just a sea of people. And they open the door and I go like, I ain't going in there. Give me a push. And I went.
And maximum security.
Maximum security.
With how many other people?
300.
300 people in one room?
880 square feet.
Oh my God.
With two toilet bowls.
Yikes.
So four cells. Cell A, B, C, D. Cell A was where you went if you were sick and dying or you were in trouble. They had a toilet bowl. Cell B, cell C, no toilets. Cell D, which is where I was, one toilet bowl. Mm. So if you had to piss, they'd pass you a 2-liter bottle. You'd urinate in the 2-liter bottle. They'd dump it in a 5-gallon bucket. 5-gallon bucket gets full. They get one of the low-level peons to take the 5-gallon bucket, cell A, and dump it in the toilet bowl.
Could you easily go in between each cell?
There's no room. No room to move. Everybody sat on their butt, and the person in front of you sat his butt on your feet, and your hands were on his shoulders.
Oh, my God.
And when you slept, it's like, open a can of sardines. That's the way people slept. Not on their back, on their side.
And during the day, could you walk around? Is there
nowhere to walk.
Oh, my God.
So you just sat. And the only time you got out is if you had a visitor. And if you didn't have a visitor, you stayed in the cell.
And what about your food?
500 calories a day.
Where do you eat it, or how are people eating it?
So they would, in the morning, it's like rice with hot chocolate mixed in it. And they'd bring a 5-gallon bucket for each cell. Didn't matter how many people were in there. You got a 5-gallon bucket and that was it. Everybody get one scoop. That was breakfast. Lunch would be 3/4 of a cup of rice and a little 4-inch piece of dried fish. And dinner would be 3/4 of a cup of rice and a little hard-boiled egg. Or they'd alternate it between lunch and dinner like that. Mm-hmm. It was nasty. You couldn't eat it.
Mm.
So the people that didn't have support from their families would starve to death, die.
Like literally just die.
You know, it'd go over like 3-4 month time period. You see pictures of the World War II concentration camps?
Yeah.
Where it's just the skin hanging off of their bones.
Yeah.
And their feet, that's what they look like.
Mm.
And there's no medical care, no dental care. So the only way you can go to the hospital is if you have a court order from a judge, which would take years, or it's a life or death situation.
Mm.
And a life or death situation is when they can't get a reading on the blood pressure apparatus. When they take your BP and they can't get a reading, okay, it's life or death situation, take them in. Well, pretty much dead.
At that point, they're dead, yeah.
They're dead, yeah.
Yeah.
So these guys, at the end, their tongues would be sticking out of their mouth, and their eyes would be rolling back in their head, and their ankles were like the size of apples, just swollen. And they would be in the bathroom on a plastic chair because they'd shit themselves and piss themselves.
Oh, my God.
And so they'd do that, and someone would dump water and wash them off, and that's how they spent their days until they'd go. That was a hard one to digest because they would all be begging for food, you know? I'd be eating, and they're like, give us food. I'd throw my chicken bones away, and boom, they're just fighting for them. So I would share food with them.
You had more food than most people?
Yeah, because my wife would bring it every day. So the gang leader one day says, why are you feeding these guys? They're hungry. I mean, they're dying. He goes, exactly. I'm like, I don't get it. He goes, don't you see what you're doing? You're prolonging their misery. Like, what do you mean? He goes, they're going to die. Plain and simple, they're going to die. So all you're doing is making it take longer.
Mm.
And I'm like, I couldn't fathom that, you know? And he goes, you know, every day you give them food, they're going to stay alive a little bit longer. But that doesn't matter because they're going to die. I thought I was being cool, you know what I mean? I just thought I was helping. And he says, you know, look at yourself, man. He goes, you're getting skinny. You're losing weight. He goes, do you want to be like them? I'm like, hell no. And he goes, well, better them than you, right? I'm like, right.
Do you still want to feed other people regardless of what he's saying? Or are you thinking?
Not like, after that. Mm. No, I'm like, hey, man, better you than me. Sorry. I got a family to get home to, you know?
Mm.
It was a big eye opener.
Mm.
Life means nothing. So I had to change. I had to change my whole mentality because better them than me, right? Better them than me. I always had to remember that. Better you than me. Sorry, dude, but better you than me. So being in there, you know, I didn't speak Tagalog for like a week because at least I could know what they were saying about me.
Right.
But they didn't know that I knew. So when I finally decided to speak, there were five guys that were going to jump me. And I could hear them talking. Hey, let's jump the white guy. And the gang leader wasn't in the cell. He was out.
Okay.
He could go out whenever he wanted. So I hear him planning it, you know, let's beat him. Let's jump him. That's the time when I told him, I said, hey, let's do it. They're like, well. So I back into the corner. I know they can't get behind me, you know. So I'm thinking, hold my own for a little bit, but it's only a matter of time. And so I said, can I say one thing before we get started? And they're like, what? I'm like, there's five of you. There's one of me. So I'm going to lose. I know that. But three of you motherfuckers are going with me, man. So which three you think it's going to be?
Oh, snap.
Because I'm scared shitless, actually. I'm backed into the corner, man, ready to go. And one guy looks at the other one and goes, instead of Ulusha, means he's fucking crazy. They start to walk forward, and this John Bon Jovi song is going through my head. Blaze of Glory. You know that song?
Yes.
And I'm thinking to myself, I'm getting ready to die. Why is this song going through my head, you know?
Oh, my gosh.
All of a sudden, they're walking towards me, and I'm in the corner, fist up, and you hear this, hey. And it's the gang leader. Somebody had tipped him off of what was going on.
Oh.
He comes walking, and he's pissed. He's like, you know, I ain't got any detail, you know, what's going on here? So I talked to him and I was like, listen, man, you guys are going to jump me. And I was just telling him that three of them are going to go with me, you know? And he goes, you speak Tagalog? And I was like, dude, no disrespect. That's the only thing I had, you know? So I hope you understand. And he looks at those guys and he hits them all, each one of them right in the head. Whap, 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 whap. Sends them all to cell A for a week. Cell A was where you went if you were sick and dying or if you were in trouble. And he goes, come here. He had this area, probably 6 by 12, you know, that was just his area. And that's a big space in there. And he's like, you know, he goes, I wanted to talk to you, but I don't speak English. And I was like, yeah, I'm like, you know, sorry again, just trying to protect myself.
Yeah.
And he goes, yeah. He goes, is there anything I can do for you? And I was like, yeah. I go, I would love a place to sleep. And I got money. I said, I got 15,000 pesos, $300 US. I can have it here tomorrow. That'd be like having $3,000 here. He goes, bring the money tomorrow and I'll have you a bed built. So he built me a bed right next to his, 6 feet off the ground, 6 feet long, 4 feet wide. And that was my world for 5.5 years.
What?
And of course, every holidays would come, I would donate. I'd pay him rent $20 every month. He needed anything, you know, I'd be there to give money, you know, so.
So he was like your celly?
He was my bro after that.
Huh.
Yeah. I still talk to him to this day.
You're kidding. Is he still in there?
He's out, but then he's back in now for something different.
Oh, boy.
But I'll send him $40 every few months just to, because without him, I'd be dead.
Mm.
Without him and my wife, I wouldn't have made it.
Why do you think that he wanted to befriend you?
I think he just liked me. He was a nice guy. He was a cool dude.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we just got along well.
Mm-hmm.
And he liked the fact that he had an American friend.
I can imagine.
I was the only white guy in the whole jail, so.
Right.
So So he thought that was pretty cool. Man, he'd always be like, you know, Scott, in America, is it like this? Are the sidewalks really made out of gold? It's like, shh, no, dude. Only in Disney.
Yeah.
Hey, folks. Another quick break, and then we'll hear the rest of Scott's story.
Is this what the inside of your head looks like?
Oh, buddy, not even close.
High Potential Season 2, now streaming exclusively on Disney+.
I'm Morgan. I have 3 kids. I have an IQ of 160.
The hit crime drama is back.
You're a cop?
No, we solve crimes together.
New cases.
You hired me because I noticed things that you missed.
New suspects.
This is where he attacked her.
New season.
You're waiting on me to leave so you can poke around without a warrant, aren't you?
Yeah.
High Potential Season 2, now streaming exclusively on Disney+. 18 plus subscription required. T's and C's apply.
Hi, I'm Nancy Cartwright. You may know me better as the voice of Bart Simpson. On Simpsons Declassified, we're diving into the mysteries that keep the Simpsons forever young. Have you ever wondered how the Simpsons regularly predicts future events? Who better to ask than the show's creators, performers, and writers? The celebrity guests. Be sure to follow and listen to Simpsons Declassified wherever you get your podcasts.
The Monopoly game at McDonald's is back, and with a 1 in 4 chance to win instantly on pack, you could get your hands on a £2,000 Jet 2 holiday, a Big Mac, Merlin annual passes for 4, and even more epic prizes. Go on, it's your go. 18 plus, UK, ends 21st of October. Selected menu items, subject to availability. App may be required. See mcdrules.co.uk. The Monopoly game at McDonald's is back. Play today with the Chicken Big Mac. So you can win big while tucking into the 3 layers of soft bun with delicious gherkins, the iconic Big Mac sauce, and crispy tender chicken patties. Go on, it's your go. From 11 a.m. until the 21st of October. Participating in restaurants, subject to availability. App may be required. 18 plus, UK, see mcdrules.co.uk.
We're back.
So then the extortion started. The police would come to the jail, and it'd be every 6 weeks or so, a different one would come.
To check on you?
Yeah, to help me, so to speak.
What?
So the first time it happened, they said, someone's at the gate for you. I go out there, and there's a police officer there. And he's like, Scott's Party. You know, Party's like, bro. You know, he pretends like we're good buddies. How are you? Fine. And he's like, I want to help you. Then I'm like, oh, I get it. You want to help me? Okay. He goes, you pay 5 million pesos. It's $125,000. Pay 5 million pesos. You drop your case against her and you're going home.
You drop your case against her?
Yeah.
So your case is still active?
Yep. But I said, no, pay you 5 million pesos and drop my case against her? I said, no fucking way. Okay. And then 6 weeks later, another one would come. You know, hey, Scott. And it was the same thing. Every time I'm like, no way, man, I'm not going to pay. Well, in the meantime, I'd have all these court hearings scheduled. And I would think, okay, I got this date scheduled. We're going to get everything laid out and I'm out of here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm out of here in a month.
Right.
And we go to court and sorry, no hearing today. I'll deliver it. The prosecutor was in on it. The judge was in on it.
Wait, what?
Yes.
Yep. So every time that you went, you were just thinking, why isn't this happening?
And they get you all the way to the court and you get in the holding cell and you're waiting to go in and they'd be like, okay, let's go back. There's no court today. Why? Well, the judge is on vacation or the prosecutor's sick.
How many times did this happen over how long a period?
Oh, God, I think I had 56 hearings scheduled in 5 years and maybe 7 or 8 of them went through.
Wow.
So that kept going on every 6 weeks. Another cop would come in, 5 million pesos dropped. And I said, ain't happening. Well, then they'd start lowering the price. 4 million pesos. Drop your case against her. No, ain't happening. The times that we did have a hearing that would go through, my wife would go to the court.
Mm-hmm.
When we'd leave, she'd be leaving and the prosecutor would be conveniently sitting outside, standing against the rails, just giving her a big smile.
Oh my God.
Just waiting for her to approach him. Let's settle this thing.
Right.
And I said, don't.
Just waiting for the money to fall.
Yeah. They all knew I was innocent. They all knew, you know.
Of course.
They just want the money.
Of course.
So as the price starts to drop, at the 4-year mark, it went down to 0. Don't pay any money. Just drop your case against her.
Oh.
Now she's getting desperate because she thinks I'm going to pay. It's clear I'm not going to pay. So what they said is, no money, drop your case against her, and just give something for the boys. For the boys is a term there. Just give us some money for, you know, facilitating everything. He goes, you don't have to pay anything. Just drop your case. And just, you know, give something for the boys. You're never going to get out. You'll never get out of here. You're going to get convicted. You're going to go to prison. I go, you know what, man? You're right. I'm like, I want to go home, man. I'm tired of this place. This place sucks. He goes, now you're talking. I go, but the thing is I don't know how much money to give. You know, and he goes, just, you know, whatever you think is good for the boys. Don't you? We've been working hard on this. Mm. Oh, okay. I said, okay. I go, wait, I got it. I know how much I'm going to give. And he goes, oh, good. And he goes, how much?
Oh, no.
And like, it's rebar. The doors rebar. I just stick my finger and I'm like, fucking one peso, motherfucker. Fuck you. Right in his face. I'm giving you shit. And this dude turned so red. He was pissed.
Oh,
he was like,
my God.
He goes, you're going to die in here. Mm. And I point to the sky. I'm like, I don't know, man. I got a pretty good bodyguard. You know, 4 years, I was doing pretty good. Mm. So he turns around and walks off. And I'm thinking, I got you. It was just like a movie. He gets to the hallway where the hallway would start. And he puts his finger up in the air. And he goes, what's your pretty wife's name, Marnelli? And I was like, well, you cocksucker. And then he turns around. And he goes, and little Nicole, right? Nicole's, what, 5 or 6 now? And I was like, you motherfucker. And he goes, and let's not forget Scott Jr. Now he's got my attention. I go, and? He goes, you never know. Rape, murder, people come missing all the time, man. I was scared then. Fucking scared. My heart's going. There's nothing I could do. I said, but I'll tell you what. Here's what I know. And now he's cocky. He's like, what? And I go, well, you're here because you want money. That means you ain't got no money. What I'm going to do is I'm going to hire your best friend. If anything happens to my family, one hair is harmed, I'm going to hire your best friend to rape your wife and kill your fucking son and kill your daughter and your dogs and your cats and whatever else is in your house. Mm. And he just looks at me and he goes, Patayinkita is what he said. It means you're fucking dead. I said, yeah, fuck you. Get out of here. And he turned around and walked off. And my heart's a pound, and he walks out, and I'm just like, and there's some other guys on the hallway that heard everything. They said, you're fucking crazy, dude. You are nuts. And I'm like, oh, whatever. I was scared. My heart's pounding right now. Hmm. So I go back to my little world, my bed, and Leo, the gang leader, he goes, what'd you do that for? And I'm like, what else am I supposed to do? And he goes, you're crazy, dude. That was dumb. Hmm. I'm like, okay, whatever. So the next day comes, visiting time. My wife doesn't show up. And I'm like, okay. Maybe she's sick or something happened. They can't make it today. But she's always there. Every day. So, okay, that's fine. I thought about it through the night, you know, what if? But I'm like, no. He's just bluffing. And the next day came. Visiting hours come, she doesn't show up. Then I'm worried. I'm going, fuck, man, are they dead? You know? Did I just get them killed? Me and my mouth? And that night I didn't sleep. So all I could think about, you know, what was going through my head was pictures of them getting killed. Pictures of them getting raped. You know, just going all through my head. Pictures of them just laying in the ground in blood. And it was like, it was torture. Hmm. So next day comes, and they don't show up. That's day 3. And now I'm going, they're dead. They probably did what they said they were going to do, you know?
At this point, you had seen them every single day.
Yeah.
For the past 4 years now?
Yep. And I don't have food. But that part didn't really bother me because I was too worried to eat anyways. So I had a guy I knew. I asked him, can you have your wife call my wife and find out what's going on? Because they haven't been here. They said, yeah, sure. But I had to wait till the next day, visiting time, to get news. And I had to wait for him to come back from visiting hours after it was over to get the news. Because I couldn't go up because I didn't have a visitor. So when he came back, I go and find him. I said, hey, what'd she say? He goes, she called her, but the phone is not in service. And I was just like, for sure, they're gone.
Oh my God.
Dead. And again, the images, just them being killed. They have a thing, it's called snalvage. Snalvage. And it's where they pick them up, they take them out to the rural area where the train tracks are, and they kill them, and they just leave them on the tracks. The police do that.
Police do this.
Yeah, the police do that. Couldn't stop crying, man. Because it's all that would go through my head. And I just sit in my little bed, and, you know, I didn't have any pillows, but I had like t-shirts, and I just cover my face because I didn't want people to see me crying.
Yeah.
Because they all thought I was a psycho, you know?
Of course.
The crazy white dude, you know? So I didn't want him to see me crying. And then the gang leader would be like, hey, man, there's nothing you can do. As if he's confirming that they're gone. And I go, so they're dead? And he goes, oh, I don't know, but I mean, it don't look good. And I'm just, the worst thing ever been through in my life. Mental torture is the worst, man. I'd rather be physically tortured than mentally tortured like that. So another sleepless night. Day five comes around. Visitors are there and nothing. Well, after about 15 minutes of that, they said, Scott, you have a visitor. I said, okay. But usually when they say, Scott, your wife's here. So Scott, you have a visitor. I said, okay, who is it? We don't know. And I'm just going, fuck.
At this point, had you eaten in 5 days?
No.
Okay.
No. So I'm thinking, okay, it's someone coming to give me the news that they're dead. So I try to compose myself. I get my shirt on, get ready to go up. And then they come back and go, oh, hey, it's your wife. I was like, your mother, what? You know, they open the door and I get upstairs, the third floor to the visiting area. And I see them way back in the corner. And I'm like, wow, here they are. You know, they're alive.
That mean your son, your daughter, and your wife?
And my wife, yep, all three of them. And then I got really pissed. I get back there, I'm like, where the fuck have you been, man? It's been 5 days, you know? And she's just like, they've been sick. Kids had the flu. And I'm like, oh, right, yeah. Okay, yeah, gotcha, you know? The whole time I'm thinking they're dead. And they've been murdered. And I never told them about what had happened until a couple of years ago. It was just horrible. And, you know, eventually I got acquitted after 5.5 years.
Wow. They found you not guilty and just were able to let you go?
Well, it gets better. There was a lot of media attention on the case. My mom got with an organization, I don't want to say their name. They specialize in Americans that are imprisoned in foreign countries.
Okay.
And she got a hold of this guy, the owner, and he looked at my case and said, this is the first case I've seen where there is so much evidence in his favor. And he ended up taking my case on for free. And they charge a lot of money to do a case.
Yeah.
And all we had to do was pay the phone bill, the phone calls, and stuff like that. He got the California Innocence Project involved. And they came to the Philippines and they started attending my hearings. And once there started becoming more media attention, and then the UN got involved, they investigated it. They wrote the Philippine government a letter, said there's no evidence against this guy, and you've had him in pretrial detention for 5 years. Then they had to give me a trial.
Right, it was a global story.
It was becoming embarrassing for them. U.S. Embassy wouldn't help me at all.
Why?
They came to the jail and said, sorry, there's nothing we can do for you. Here's a list of lawyers you can hire.
Wow.
I'm like, wait, I'm innocent. They said, we can't get involved. They wouldn't do nothing.
Wow.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Uncle Sam.
Right.
Because you think that, especially if you've been framed up, your government's going to help you.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Uh-uh. Ain't happening. And they wouldn't even attend my hearings. Nothing. They wouldn't do anything. Well, after the media attention started coming out, well, they started showing up to the hearings.
Oh, interesting. Convenient.
Yeah. Yeah. So the judge gave me a trial. They couldn't hide it anymore.
Right. Right.
You know, there's too much media attention. So they gave me a trial of 5 years based on the facts. And 5 years and 4 months, I was acquitted. Hmm.
And so I'm assuming when you got home, you packed up shop?
When I got acquitted, I came back to the jail and they said, okay, get your stuff. You're going to leave in 3 hours. I said, okay. Well, the 3 hour mark comes. It was actually about the 2 hour mark. And I told Leo, the gang leader, I said, hey, I was thinking, why don't I just go home tomorrow, you know? And then we'll just kind of hang out tonight so we can like hang out one last time, da da da. And I'll just leave tomorrow. And he goes, you're fucking crazy. He goes, no, get out of here. Well, the truth was, I was scared to go out because I'd been there so long, you know? Mm. I was institutionalized. I was used to life in there. Going out was scary. Mm. But I did. I had to leave. And I hadn't seen my wife or the kids in about a year and 3 months, because I left about the 4 year mark.
She left to go back to the United States?
No, she left to go back to the province. She had a nervous breakdown and, you know, she had a lot. She had to deal with everything.
Who was feeding you?
By that time, I was established enough where I could get people to buy me food and bring me stuff. And my uncle would send somebody once a week.
Okay. You could find your way.
Yeah.
Got it.
So I got out. The next day it was international news because I was the longest American detained in a foreign country without a trial. They came up that night, my wife and my son and my daughter. They got in late. It was about midnight. But when they got to the house, I'm thinking, you know, it's going to be great, right? Kids, daddy, daddy, you know, hugs. And it was totally different.
Yeah, I can imagine.
When they walked through the door, my daughter's kind of like looking around. My son's kind of like, okay.
Oh.
I'm like, hey. I'm like, come here. And they're kind of standoffish a little bit.
Yeah, I'm sure they didn't know how to engage with you at first.
Right, right. So I said, okay, come upstairs. And I took them upstairs. And when we got upstairs, I closed the door. I started tickling them. And then they were like laughing. And then everything was cool. So we were good.
Nice.
And that was Midnight in Manila with Scott McMahon in a conversation with Dawn Fraser. One thing that may not have been clear in the finished recording that happened off mic is it turns out that Dawn actually did a lot of work in the world of people who are falsely accused of crimes and falsely incarcerated. And in conversation with Scott off mic, it became obvious that they actually knew people in common from that world. And while Dawn had never heard about Scott's story, there were reference points in it that she clearly understood and responded to and allowed her to take the conversation in directions that I would not have known to. So I really got to thank Dawn for stepping in and being that fresh set of ears that we thought the story needed. There was a lot of things in that recording, the initial recording, that did not make it into the final edit because there's just so much to this. But Scott has actually completed a book on this experience. This experience goes much beyond what you heard in this recording today. So if you are an editor or a publisher out there and you have heard this episode and you're like, that was an amazing story of resilience and terror and, endurance. What did I already say, endurance? I'll say it again. Endurance. So if you are out there and you're an agent or an editor or a publisher and you are thinking that is amazing, I want to dig into this deeper, there's a lot more to dig into and you should reach out to us and we will hook you up with Scott. Please, if that's you, get in touch. And if you want to support Risk, which is inherently expensive to operate and regularly struggles to even just break even, consider joining our Patreon, which comes with tons of perks, ad-free episodes and bonus stories like the one we've just put up this week from Andy Picard. That's at patreon.com/risk. Or if you'd rather, send us a one-time donation at paypal.com bit.me/riskshow. Let us know what you think of this and any of these conversation stories we've been having at the Risk Podcast Fans Discussion Group on Facebook, or post on the r/riskpodcast subreddit, or you can email us directly at kevin@risk-show.com. If you've got a story about being wrongfully imprisoned for 5 years or longer that you'd like to tell us, just go to risk-show.com/submissions and send us your pitch. Because, folks, today's the day. Take a risk.